Quick review. This is the whole purpose why Titus is in Crete in the first place, is to establish elders, because there were no elders in any of the congregations on the island. And the elder, you see other names used for an elder. An elder is also referred to as an overseer or as a shepherd. And we talked about the role of an elder and their job in the church. And understanding their role really helps us to understand and explain some of these qualifications, because the number one overarching qualification of an elder is that an elder is to be what? Blameless or above reproach. And then all of these other things fall under that same category. And we did this little test where, what do we expect of people in leadership positions? And you guys all said very similar things to what you read about with elders in regards to whether it's a presidential candidate or a CEO or whatever it might be. These are natural expectations that a person comes to when we talk about leadership and someone who's going to lead a group. And so we shouldn't be surprised to find the things that we do in the eldership. Now, we broke down, this is where we spent most of our time. We talked about this requirement of being a husband to one wife and all the questions around that, because there's a lot of ifs and ands about that. What if his wife dies? Or what if he gets remarried after his wife dies? And all these questions. We then looked at the next qualification, which that his children are to be believers, not subject to the charge of debauchery or insubordination. The emphasis we looked at is not on the number, but the emphasis is on the spiritual state of those children. And of course, that brings up other questions. How many children? Is it all children? And we had a really good discussion to close our class last week. And Jeff had some really good points as well about not creating certain agendas where we say it's all or nothing. And sometimes we need to look at things with a little bit of a broader brush. But that being said, Titus is then going to be instructed by Paul. Paul is going to go through and give a series of things that should never be present in the life of an elder, and then a list of things that should always be present in the life of an elder. So it's one of those not this, but that kind of things that you see that Paul is very good at and what he likes to do when he's writing. And so he's going to begin with by saying, as an overseer, as God's steward, must be above reproach. He repeats that same overarching qualification. And this is what it looks like to be above reproach. He must not be arrogant or quick-tempered or a drunkard or violent or greedy for gain. So let's look at each of these. Yours might not say arrogant. Does anyone say something different for that first not this qualification? It's right after that.
Self-willed.
Self-willed. Anyone else have anything different? Say it again. Okay. Right. So this idea, not arrogant, okay, or the literal translation is not self-willed. And so it could come out as either pride or arrogance, but really the idea of selfishness and being self-willed is centered in this attitude of arrogance and pride, right? And so this qualification is saying an elder, someone who's going to lead a group of people, cannot be someone who is selfish. It cannot be someone who is centered around themselves and thinks that they have got everything figured out, and it leads to this pride and this arrogance about them. Now, does that mean that an elder is not going to be confident in their ability to lead? No, this is talking about something different. This is talking about pride or arrogance that comes from a selfish, self-righteous, almost kind of an attitude, this self-willness that takes place. Yeah, Donna. Really?
Yes.
That's really interesting. I wonder how they come to that.
Yeah, not overbearing.
Yeah, and you know, maybe it's because if someone is arrogant and insisting on their way, what do they end up being?
Overbearing.
Overbearing, right? And unfortunately, sometimes you'll see that when there's no elders present, A lot of times, when you're just having men's groups in some groups, in some congregations, there's usually one voice that ends up being overbearing or the voice. And I would encourage people to think about those kind of qualities when they're putting men into elderships in those kind of places. Just because they talk a lot doesn't mean that they are the right man for the job. Second one, not quick-tempered. This is inclined to anger or passionate. Now, again, this is not saying that an elder shouldn't be passionate about the truth or passionate about saving people. This is someone who very quickly, very easily is brought to a position of being angry and then acts upon that anger in a wrongful, sinful way. Paul says, be angry and yet sin not, all right? I think the correlation that we see here between some of Paul's other writings is when Paul talks about the Lord's servant and he gives kind of a description of what the Lord's servant must be in 2 Timothy 2, he says, the Lord's servant must not be quarrelsome, but kind to everyone, able to teach, and patiently enduring evil. A quality of an elder should be someone who can patiently deal with difficult things without quickly getting angry. Because as elders, are they going to have to deal with things that should make people righteously angry? Yes, there are issues that should bring about righteous anger. But this is discussing a characteristic that then leads to sin. Someone who is quickly angered, not even over serious things that they should be angry about, but over the little things, perhaps. The next one, not a drunkard. Now, this one has a lot of debate about it, and we're going to talk about it. We're going to go here. Because the literal translation of not a drunkard is not given to wine or not addicted to wine. So there's a lot of debate within different people and within the church. Does this mean that an elder should, is this merely saying that an elder should not be a drunkard or addicted to alcohol? Or is this saying that an elder should never drink or never touch alcohol? Wayne, go ahead. Right, right. And that's the exact interpretation. It's very similar to what you see in Proverbs, to not look long at the wine when it's red. And it's this idea of this, I have to have it. And every time you see this person, you know people like that, where every time they post a picture, what do they have in their hand? You know, they've got beer, they've got alcohol, or every time you open up the refrigerator, it's chock full. But here's where some of the arguments come in. When you look at the way that the qualifications for elders and deacons are put up in Timothy and how those are recorded, for the deacon, it says a deacon is to be not given to much wine. But then for the elder, it uses the exact same language, but it says not given to wine. So what does that mean? If we take the interpretation that it means that an elder is allowed to have a drink, then that means the interpretation using the same language of the deacon, not given to much wine, what would be the difference between those? If drunkenness is condemned, period, one is not given to much wine, one is not given to wine, why is there a difference? There's no difference in the Greek word, but the word not given to much wine, that phrase is put in there with the deacon. So if there's not a difference, why is it recorded differently? Do you see that that's a question that people would bring up? And so the argument that some people come to is that means that for the deacon, it's acceptable for them to perhaps have a drink, not given to much wine, but for the elder, they're not to be given to wine. In other words, no wine, period. There's arguments on both sides. And the argument that people will try to make saying that oikos or wine was not alcoholic, that's not correct. It was. However, it was not alcoholic like we would have alcoholic drinks today, okay? They didn't have 90 proof back then, all right? They didn't have the same alcohol level content as most beers do today. But it was still alcoholic. It wouldn't be condemned or warned against if it didn't lead to anything. And here's my example of that. If this is not referring to an alcoholic drink, what's the purpose for Paul's warning against an elder being not given to grape juice? It doesn't make any sense, does it? Because unless you're trying to warn against irregular bowel movements, let's just be honest here, let's joke about it, there doesn't make any sense. Marv, go ahead.
My take on it, but it could be totally wrong, is we look at the time when it's written, and they had wine, and even they had beer during that period of time, but the key word is addiction.
Okay.
And the point of it here is the fact, in today's world, we have things worse than wine and beer as far as addiction that can be prescription drugs or whatever else, and so where do we draw the line at?
Right.
Someone could be totally inherent on prescription drugs.
Right.
So, I mean, I think the thing is addiction and not what the substance is at this point.
Okay. Okay, Brad?
It comes back to not self-will. Jesus, when he did everything, it was never for his own will.
Right.
God's will. Not being self-willed is along the same lines. Not being a drunkard, whose will is it?
Yeah, that's your own will.
Whose will is it?
Right.
Is the alcohol, the prescription drug,
right,
whatever it is, that is will you're following.
Right.
And it's not God's will.
Right. Now, I think there's some things that we can establish for certain, no matter what conclusion you come to. And I'll get to you in just a second, JC. Is drunkenness wrong, period?
Yes.
Is addiction wrong, period?
Yes.
And it impairs anyone's ability to lead. And we would all agree with that. We would all understand that.
Addiction isn't wrong, period.
What's that?
Addiction isn't wrong, period, if you're a very ill person taking stuff to manage your pain.
Another debate for another time. But yes, I'm not touching that with a 10-foot pole. Right. 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 When we're talking about self-willed, we're not talking about medication or things like that. Okay. Wow. All right. So, yes. insisting on one's rights when it would cause someone to stumble, both sides would understand that is wrong, sinful. JC, you had your hand up. See, and that's another debate, too, so we don't know. But in my now, when you say it's not in the Greek.
As you said, in the Greek, both this and the deacons read exactly the same way. They're simply translated as much versus.
No, the deacons is not the same Greek.
I don't believe so. I'll have to look at that. So I think.
Polis,
right.
If it's the same word.
Right, and I understood that it was different.
Okay,
so.
No.
The word for wine is the same, but there's another word inserted for the deacon, which means much wine. So that's what I meant. Sorry, confusion. Does that clear that up?
Yes.
Okay. Good. All right. Let's just stick with the things that we can agree on, and I want people to be encouraged to look this out for themselves and to study this for themselves. There's a lot to be said for wisdom. And there's a lot to be said for the culture in which you live as well. And that's another lesson in and of itself. Because there are some cultures where, you know, alcohol is used in a way which is, in comparison, controlled and not revolved around sex and party or things like that. Whereas within our culture, that's kind of, any time you have a beer commercial or something like that, what's always associated with it? Yeah, so there's other things to think about, but that's a lesson for another time. That's getting away from the context. But not a drunkard, period. Not violent. This is going to kind of feed off this idea of not being quick-tempered. The literal translation is not a striker or not a brawler. If you have someone in a leadership position, you don't want to wake up the next day and find that they're in jail because someone mouthed off to them, and their idea of how to fix this situation is to knock some sense into them, all right? This is just a basic thing. These are natural things that we understand with people in leadership positions. And a lot of times, especially when you're in a leadership position, do you have to get burned and bite the bullet more often than not from the way that people treat you, the way that people talk to you or talk about you? And you have to be able to take it. And if you can't take it, you can't be in that position. Can you imagine if the president tried to fire back at everything the media said about him or her? Right? Okay. So you've got this idea, not violent, is going to feed off this idea of not being quick-tempered. That is not how things are solved. Not greedy for gain. This is in direct contrast to the false teachers that we're going to be seeing. These elders are being set up to rebuke. Because these false teachers are going around and they're teaching what they're teaching because they're getting money out of it. They're getting social status out of it. They're getting these different things out of it, okay? But an elder, someone in this kind of position, you need to know and trust that this isn't the kind of person that's going to take a bribe. That when there's a decision that's going to be made, they're not going to be swayed because they've been promised something. They rejoice in the truth. They love the truth. They love justice. And it reminds us of that lesson we just looked at in Exodus 18. When this was one of the requirements of setting up judges over Israel, is someone that will not take a bribe. Someone who will not desire sordid gain. Someone we looked at last Sunday who fell to this sin was one of those interesting Mesopotamian prophets. And what was his name? Balaam, right? And he fell because of his desire for sordid gain and to gain from ungodly activities. So this is this list of things that you should not see. But then you're going to see this but. And that's what Paul always does. Not this, but these characteristics. And a lot of these are in direct contrast to some of the not characteristics that you've already seen. The first one you see is, but they are to be hospitable. The exact interpretation is loving strangers. And what's really interesting, hi Steve, Grandpa again, good to see you. When you look at, especially the book of Genesis, now, generally speaking, what was the great sin that Sodom and Gomorrah was punished for? Their treatment of strangers, especially in the regards to their desire to violently, you know, deal with these men and their homosexuality that they were practicing. However, when you look at Ezekiel and how Ezekiel talks about Sodom and Gomorrah, one of the other things he talks about is their lack of hospitality. And what's really amazing is when you look at Abraham and you look at Lot in contrast to Sodom and Gomorrah. When Abraham saw strangers coming, how did he greet them?
Immediately had food prepared.
He sprinted to them, kneels, slaughters a calf, and puts on a feast for them, right? When Lot sees strangers enter the city, what did he insist they do, especially knowing the reputation of the city around them? You have to stay with me. Now put that in strike contrast to Sodom and Gomorrah. They were not hospitable, much rather they abused strangers in that sense. But this idea of hospitality is this heart of someone who is willing to give and support and help those even who they don't know. The preacher out in Arkansas who got up at 12:30 in the morning to go pick up my wife, who was in a dangerous place, who he'd never met. You know, he didn't have her in his home, but he offered it. And getting up, period, and offering his transportation and his time to a complete stranger, and then offering his money and anything else he can do, that's what this is talking about. That's this idea of hospitality. It's not just for those that you love or your family. This is opening up your home and your heart to anyone who has a need and who you could help. And that's this idea that's used here. A lover of good. When you look at it's just exactly what it is, loving good. Wow. Loving good. When you look in the context of this book, there's a lot of emphasis on good deeds and good deeds and good deeds. Where the false teachers are told over again they're unfit for any good work, and they rejoice in wrongful doing. I really believe that this is a focus not just on this general loving good, but that an elder is one who rejoices when good is done and looks for opportunities to do good themselves. Yeah, Brad.
That was one of the main criticisms Jesus had for the Jewish leadership, was they weren't doing good. They were supposedly religious, but they were not taking care of the widows. They were not taking care of the
right.
They were not doing all these good things that they should do.
And not even their own family. When their parents needed support when they were older, they got around it by saying, this money I should have set aside to help my parents, I'm going to call it Corban and dedicate it to God, so that way I'm excused from taking care of them. And in the meantime, they took that money that was Corban and used it for their own selves and their own pleasures. And it just blows your mind. How could someone do that to their own parents? An elder is someone who loves good, who rejoices in good, who rejoices in doing good. Self-controlled. Now, I believe this is going to help us understand that whole alcohol question, because this is used in direct contrast to one of those not this, but that. An elder is someone who has complete control over themselves. Nothing controls them. They control their life. They control things. And when you look at addiction, and we're not talking medicinal here, we're talking about, you know, recreational things and whatnot. When someone continues to devote themselves to alcohol, who ends up becoming in control of their life? It's the alcohol. It drives them. It controls them. And then it controls other facets of their life, doesn't it? It controls their money. A lot of people who become alcoholic, what do they also end up becoming? Broke and bankrupt. It controls their family relationships. A lot of people who are alcoholics end up in divorce, and they have their children and problems with their children. And all you have to do is go to an AA, and I encourage you to do this sometime. If you've never been to it, it's a great experience to sit down and be a part of that and listen to the way that people talk, because they hate it. And they don't, the people that are there, they want to be in control of their lives again. And so an elder, much rather, whether it's alcohol or any other substance, or whether it's money or whether it's things, or an elder is someone who is in control of their life. Not just abstaining from sinful things, but they are in control of their finances. They're in control of their household. They have complete control. They are the master, so to speak, over their bodies, because Jesus Christ is the master within their bodies. Okay? Yeah.
It's also applied back to the quick temper.
Right.
The quick temper. That anger is an emotional response.
Right.
The righteous anger is an intellectual response to a true injustice.
Good. Good. And so that's going to apply to several things. Right. Right.
Guided by the Spirit and the Word.
And it also applies to not violent or not a striker. Because as much as you want to give someone a good smack to the face, right, which I hope no one has, but if that's a temptation, you've got to have control. You've got to rein yourself in. Yeah, JC.
One thing I like about all of these is that there are no loopholes. There's no, because all of this from outside of God's hand,
right.
But at the same time, despite that situation being what it was, no, Job would not have been a good elder at that moment, because from human standpoint, following him as a leader, it would not have been a good leadership role for him, despite the reason for the financial loss.
Yeah, and I think we need to be careful there, and I'll just say that, because this is not saying that an elder needs to have monetary possessions. When I say that, I mean this is not someone who is gambling their money or who is controlled by their status or needing to look a particular way by different people. Go ahead.
Cater that way. In Job's circumstance, he went from ultra-wealthy to
Right.
Which, if we were looking at that, we would say some bad decisions were made there.
Oh, from appearance of other people.
Yes.
Despite if they didn't know why it was. Okay, no, I see what you're saying there. Yeah, people would probably look at that and go, oh, that's not someone that would be a good leader. Where if they knew the reasoning behind it and why, they would think something different. Okay, good. All right. Upright, that is innocent or just and righteous. And I believe that's very self-explanatory. Now again, does this mean that an elder is perfect, sinless? No. But when you look at the pattern in the walk of someone's life, you look at someone and say that they look like, every day, they look more like Jesus Christ.
They live a life of repentance.
Right, right. And that's going to come together with this next one, holy. This is set apart or pious or devout. They look like Christ, and it's intentional, and you've seen that growth in their life where you look at them and say, hey, they are different than they used to be. They have matured. They have grown in Christ. They are holy, and they're walking holy in their walk. Yeah, Brad. Right.
Because of this, I'm not talking minor errors, but some egregious.
Well, right. And it goes back to.
I don't know if I can follow them as a leader anymore because of what's happened.
Right. And it goes back to the principle of mentorship. The whole, mantra, do as I say, not as I do, doesn't really work because. Most of the time, what are people going to emulate and imitate? Your actions, what you do. And as a leader of the church, now granted, we preach a perfect gospel and we are not sinless people. No one will, and so if you're going to eliminate someone being in a leadership position because they've struggled with anything in their life, then no one can be an elder. What this is referring to, though, is again, someone's practice, someone's walk. If someone's practice and walk is not in the light but is in darkness, how are they going to be able to lead a flock? Because the sheep follow the shepherd. And so if you have, let's just use an example, if you've got a shepherd who is violent, right, and that's how they handle situations, and that qualification wasn't paid attention to, and they aren't holy and upright in their actions towards others, what do you think will start happening when there's conflicts within the congregation? They'll be handled the same way because that's what's been modeled for them by the, quote, leaders of the church, right? Yeah, Marvin.
You know what I like about this is what the elders and deacons should be doing, but actually it's what every Christian should be doing.
That's the point we were going to get to. All right.
And you know, when you all look at it, it's the ruler or the measuring stick, what we need to be going by, and now quantify where our shortcomings are.
Right. And so... I really love that point, and let's just talk about that. We're going to talk about that at the end. Let's talk about that now. And the last one is discipline, which is a master of self, self-controlled again, same thing. When you look at these things, which one of these characteristics should not be present in the life of a Christian? I mean, not, all of these should be present in the life of a Christian. Now, that being said, we do need to look at some other things. Do you have to be married to be a Christian? Do you have to have children to be a Christian?
No.
But if you are married and if you do have children, are the qualifications held to an elder, should those be any different than what a Christian should be expectant of themselves? No. All of these qualities, these are, again, these are just characteristics that we naturally expect of people, in this case, in a leadership position. But this should be things that we naturally expect from someone who is following Jesus Christ. Because if you're following Jesus Christ, guess what you're going to be? You're going to be hospitable. And you're going to be holy. And you're going to be self-controlled. And you're going to be disciplined. And you're going to be a lover of good. And if you're following Jesus, you're His disciple, you're not going to be arrogant. You're not going to be quick-tempered. You're not going to be violent. You're not going to be a drunkard. You're not going to be greedy for gain. All of these qualities are things that you should see in the life of every single Christian and the life of every single believer. Yeah, and then yeah.
Talking about the growth and over a lifetime, that's 2 Peter chapter 1.
Right.
Adding all the qualities which mimic very closely these things of faith, knowledge, self-control, steadfastness, brotherly love, kindness.
Right.
He says that these are yours and
increasing. That's right. Good.
We see here.
Good. Yeah, Dwayne.
I don't know where it is, but it says not a novice.
Right. Not a new convert.
Someone who's a new convert
hasn't practiced these things yet. Right.
So you're choosing someone who's going to model it. You want to see someone who has grown and is in that situation that, yes, they used to. Now they don't because they've grown to be more like Jesus.
Right.
And so this is a test of maturity.
Perfect. Perfect. Yeah.
There's a lot of Christianity in addition to these qualifications for an elder or bishop is self-control in your mind, self-control in your body, and self-control in your spirit. And when you learn to master those things, you know, you are in self-control. And
right.
That's what a lot of Christianity is about.
Right.
You know, how you think, sexual sin. Body, things you do with your mind.
Right. Right. Perfect. So, you know, I'm looking at the time. We're probably just going to have to push this whole class back one more week. And I left time for that. That's okay. So this will become our 9-week class. Because everything I prepped for tonight, we just aren't going to get through it. So we'll cover it next week. Because we're going to spend some time on this. An elder, the next qualification says that he must hold firm the trustworthy word as taught, so that he may be able to give instruction in sound wisdom or in sound doctrine and also to rebuke those who contradict it. And again, look at the context of why elders are being put into place in all of these cities. They have people going about teaching false doctrines and not sound teaching. They need to be silenced. And the answer for that by Paul is that a strong eldership needs put into place. Now, here's what I want to talk about for a minute. This qualification, able to teach, and a lot of conversations I've had from people, comes out this way. Is brother so-and-so able to teach? And this is what I've heard sometimes. Yeah, he can. Like, he's not very eloquent, but if he needs to, or he can fill in a pinch, then that's something he could do. That is not what this word means. And that's sometimes how we use the word able. Is, are you able to do this? And it doesn't matter how well you do it. It's just so long as you're able to get it done. The word here, able, is strong, mighty, or powerful, or influential. Dunatos. This is not someone who can just, you know, isn't really good at it, but can if they need to as a last resort. Let's get the preacher to do it first. But if I need to, then I could, you know, try. That's not what this is. This is someone who is strong in the faith, is strong in the scriptures, and they are strong, mighty, powerful, and influential in giving instruction. Okay? Now, don't get me wrong. That is not saying that a person needs to be the most eloquent person in the world, or that they all need to be able to speak with the grace of, I don't know, you pick anyone who you like to listen to. That's not necessarily what this is saying. But an elder had better be able to powerfully and influentially demonstrate what sound doctrine is and also demonstrate what false teaching is. And if they can't show and lead a group in the way of what sound doctrine is and what unsound doctrine is, and do it very adequately so as to lead a group and so as even to persuade false teachers, as we'll see, and that's the hope, then that person is not qualified to be an elder. And understand me, and understand the scriptures here. This is not that they can do it as a last resort. An elder needs to have a powerful, presence as a teacher within the church. Now, that's going to come in different ways. They need to be a teacher by example, with their family, with their children. A lot of that is already taking place by the qualifications. They need to be an example, though, in teaching on a public and private level. When they came together in the future and the group was going to need shepherding after Paul was gone, after Titus was gone, who's going to do the teaching? Are they going to get another preacher to come in and do it for them? Who's doing the teaching? It's the elders. They're the ones doing the teaching. And yes, I understand that Jack and I, with our teaching, we do a lot of public teaching, and it's under the discretion of the elders, and it's under their oversight. But I'm just going to speak my mind. We'll see how this goes. I would really like to see more public teaching from our shepherds. And I'm just going to exhort you there. I know that there's private teaching that takes place, and that needs to always continue. And it happens in different ways. I just want to give you a good example that I remember a long time ago, and I've given this before. I was guest preaching at Tualatin Valley Church long before the week before they decided to hire Nathaniel May to come there and work with the group. And all the shepherds got up in front of the group and led the family in a discussion of, this is where we're at. These are things that we're looking for. This is where we need to go. This is the vision that we have. What's the feedback from the group? We need to hear from you. And there was thoughts and there was discussion, but it was led and it was directed by this group of men who were leading their flock and who were shepherding them and leading them to make the right decision. We're not just talking about getting up and teaching a Romans class or something like that. That needs to happen. But someone who is influential in leading a flock, actually leading them and making that voice known. And sometimes that happens in different ways. Sometimes there's one elder who speaks better than the rest of them, so he does most of the public work. And that's fine, that's great. But elders in general, they've got to be good teachers. And they've got to be teaching people publicly and yes, in cases, privately and yes, in some cases, publicly. That's why when you look at this whole context, this is the answer to rebuking false teachers, is elders. They're the ones that are doing the teaching. Yes, there's a place for the evangelists. Yes, there's a place for the teachers. And yes, they all work under the oversight of the elders. And we see that in Ephesians 4, don't we? That God has given apostles and prophets and shepherds and evangelists and teachers for the equipping of the saints. That's not saying all teaching should fall on the shoulders of the elders. But if no teaching is falling on the shoulders of the elders, then we don't have it right either. The elders need to be personally doing this themselves and able to do it strong, mighty, powerfully, influentially. And if they're not able to teach, if they can't adequately understand the difference between sound doctrine and not sound doctrine and demonstrate that, this is not someone who's qualified to be a shepherd of God's church. I'm sweating, okay? this is what it is. Now, what's the standard for that? Because are people going to have a different understanding of what it means to be a strong teacher or an influential teacher? You need to have some grace here, okay? Yeah, Brad.
I'm being a strong teacher, being I do that as a profession in a different setting.
Right.
There are strong teachers who teach in vastly different ways.
Right, right.
I have my style. I couldn't teach in the same style as, Jennifer does in English or something. If I tried to teach class in the style that you use, it wouldn't work. It's got to be from me. Now,
right.
I can teach my subject strongly and take care of problems and refute it, but I do it differently than someone else who might have a different style, a different approach, and oftentimes that's needed.
Right.
Because I'm teaching something and the student's going, I'm not learning it from you, Mr. Sims. I just can't get it. We're not making a connection. Well, let's go across the hall to the other math teacher and have them explain it to you.
Right.
Because sometimes getting it from that different perspective with the same strength makes a difference.
Right.
You don't want to ever the same strength and way of doing it, because then you wouldn't reach everybody.
Right. And I think that's part of why there's a multiplicity of elders, isn't there? Yeah, Joanne. Right.
Of the congregation.
Right.
So they're counseling and they're teaching that way more than in a get up in front of the whole congregation.
Right.
So they are teaching.
Right.
But they're doing more one-on-one teaching.
Right. And that needs to happen, period. I was just expressing, I think sometimes it's really good, if you're going to lead a group, sometimes it's good to actually get up in front and teach in that way as well. Yeah.
The common thread with all of the elders of OBJ has to be, they have to know the scripture.
And that's it.
There is no way they're going to be able to rebuke those who contradict and rebuke the false teaching if they don't know the scripture.
Right, right. Someone had a hand over here I was missing. Yeah, Dave?
I was just going to make that point. In order to rebuke those who contradict, it's incumbent upon that elder that he has a thorough knowledge of
right.
the scriptures, not just a knowledge that's a surface. I mean, they are consumed with the word, and they reflect upon it daily, because they're going to need to do that when the problems do arise.
Right.
And so with that being said, they have an in-depth knowledge into the Word of God. And like what Joanne said, I agree with her. How many times the elder has to do this, and they're doing this, dealing with all the issues that come up in a congregation, the family issues, etc., that happen. They have to then be able to sit down with those people and talk to them and know the scriptures to show them that what they're doing is wrong or maybe not in line with what a Christian should be doing.
Right.
They can't do that unless they have a real sound knowledge of the Word of God.
Right. And that's the focus. Yeah, Dwayne.
We had an elder who would have had a heart attack if you put him up in a lectern
mm-hmm.
and present.
Mm-hmm.
What you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
But he was very good at taking someone aside and saying, that's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You need to stop. You need to do it this way. You need to make an apology, or you need to do what, you know, whatever. We also had an elder that could bring the scriptures alive like no one, I mean,
right.
Talking about individuals.
Right.
But like no one else.
Right.
He just had a knack for that.
Right.
But he didn't have the same, I don't know, impetus, the same burning to take somebody aside and say you're wrong.
Right. And so you play to their strengths. And let me rephrase everything so we don't have any misunderstandings. Okay. This is not an expression to say that every individual elder needs to rotate and be in the teaching cycle to be in front of a group. But if an elder is not able to teach, they're not powerful, they're not strong and influential, they couldn't teach if you asked them to. We've got a problem there, okay? And whether it's in a public setting or a private setting, an elder has to be strong and influential and powerful and ready to be able to teach people sound doctrine. That has to be, it has to be there, because they're the ones that lead the group. And that's what I'm trying to get to. That's not saying you don't play to their strengths. That's not saying you have to have them on a constant rotation. But there needs to be teaching and strong teaching from the eldership. Yes, and then yes.
I never hear anything, whether it's comments in a class or getting up. Why can't we share? You surely must have some wisdom by now, was my thoughts as a young man. Why can't I hear that?
Mm-hmm.
And that was very frustrating as a young Christian.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Jeff, you kind of had your hand up. You're going to wait.
I was just going to add that sometimes Christ
right.
in worship service. They can exhort you to be present. They can exhort you to take the scriptures home and apply what they heard today.
Right.
That's another way of teaching. That's not necessarily going after the gainsayer, so to speak.
Right.
But the bottom line to me, again, is to make point, again, is that any one of these qualifications, there's a barrier. There's a minimum.
Right.
That's the principle.
Right. Right. Yes.
An elder has to preach once a month.
No.
You have to have faithful children. It has to be five, and all five have to be faithful.
Right, right.
On and on. They got to be 25. They got to be 30 years old.
Right.
There's so much judgment, and as long as you know you meet the barrier, you meet the minimum, if you will, and then some, you'll be okay.
Right.
Right.
And I really appreciate that comment about the, and we're out of time, but I think that's something that this eldership does really well. And I will say that. Hewlin, John, and Jack, with the way that they talk during class or the comments that they make before or after services, that's teaching and that's leading. And all three of them do that on a regular basis. And I do appreciate that very much. So, okay. All right. We'll see if I have a job tomorrow. All right, so Judaizing teachers. Everything I worked on today, we'll do it next week. So we will talk about verses 10 through 16. John, yes.